sin. Now, if I can make this line straight, that means I make it thinner as well. I make it thin. That means it's just alive. Alive. So, the same man exists here. There's man. But God's spirit is not. He is pulled off the plug here. The plug is off. So let's put a break in the middle. That's the wall. But the man is still alive. He has this. So that's what happened when sin came in. God originally intended this to be a permanent state of affairs. Permanent. I better write white chalk to keep it the same color. Pure. White is for purity. Permanent. That's what God intended. So for God's spirit to flow through man all the time to make his judgments correct. So, to be free within God's will. That means to use his intellect, to use his will in a certain way, in the way we have defined. But what happened is sin came in, man pulled the plug out, and the activity of the Spirit of God ceased. In other words, man's mind operates on its own now, without the help of God's Spirit. The plug is out. Spiritually, he is dying. So man then, inside here, once this happens, he says to himself, I will make my own life. So, he, my own decisions. And he goes this way, and he goes that way. And he goes this way. He doesn't know where he's going. He is all over the place. So he is making his own decisions in life. And he is saying to himself, look, I can take care of my own problems. So if I have a problem, if I have a problem in education, I will build a school here. And I will send my children to that school to be educated. But what he is blind, what he doesn't realize, is that this is, he's cut off from here. So this part is gone. There is no, he's on his own now. He is judging things on by himself. And he says, if my body goes sick, then if I have a problem with health, then I'll build a hospital in this corner here, and I'll send my sick people to that hospital where doctors will make us better. I'm not against doctors. I'm just mentioning it to show eventually I will say that none of those problems was intended to exist. And none of them would have existed if man did not pull the plug out at this point. And then he says, if something goes wrong with my mind, I'll put a a psychiatric ward on this corner, and I'll send them my people over there, where we have these specialists in mind. They understand mind, and I want to say that if God's will and if God's spirit had been allowed to permeate man's life, there would have been no sickness, no mental problems, nothing at all to pervade, to occupy man. So I am saying that man is groping in darkness inside here. Spiritual groping. Spiritual darkness. And what happens, the reason I put this line, this long line here, is to show that as time gets on, things get worse. Because it's not really on a straight line. If I had a long board, I would have made it go all the way down, so that the line would be going downwards. And we would see a sort of sinking, like I haven't got that kind of blackboard to write on. So things are getting worse. And from this point on, you can say, no human being, no human being is, quote, all there. Nobody is all there in health, or in mind, in spirit, or in body, or in soul. Man imagines that there are solutions to his problems, but he doesn't know that those are a part of the groping in the darkness. In order to illustrate this point, in the last conference, I mentioned the example of a psychologist, a psychiatrist actually, who advised somebody, it was a telephone-in program on psychology, on psychiatry again, and this man telephoned to thank the psychiatrist for his advice, because the advice he had been given was excellent, and it worked wonderfully. I want to show it to you, just to illustrate one point, that what people call success is often a miserable failure. Anyway, this man telephoned the psychiatrist and told him that he had a problem. His problem was that he was a homosexual and he was not accepted by others in the family. And he had lost his friends. He did not know what to do. So the psychiatrist told him what to do. And here's what the psychiatrist told him to do. He says, if other people will not forgive you for what you are, you should forgive yourself and move on in life. And that's what he did. He forgave himself. And he says, and then you should accept what you are and move on. And this man tried it, and now 3 weeks later, he had new friends and a new life, and he telephoned the psychiatrist to say, oh, it has worked wonderfully well. Thanks for the advice. I am very happy now and moving on. But here is what is wrong with it. When you say to somebody, forgive yourself, you imply that there is something wrong. And in this particular case, it was the man's homosexuality. But then when you say, accept what you are saying, what you are is that. So, you reject, you forgive yourself for something, then you turn around and accept the very thing that you forgave yourself about, you forgave yourself for, you accept that, so you bring it back here again, and then you move on. So you make new friends, and everything is rosy again. Now, wonderful. So what have you done? You have deceived the man into thinking that he has done something when he forgave himself. Really, it's a deception. The man who forgave himself for something has not really changed anything in his life. What he's done is done an empty ritual in which he gave up something mentally and accepted what he is, something else. In other words, but in fact, in reality, it's the same thing. He accepted what he is. So that's where deception goes on. He doesn't know that what he is the very same problem that he forgave himself for. So he accepts that, and he proceeds to make new friends. And he is elated. He has worked. Of course, we know that he has not worked, because the problem exists. The people who rejected him, who did not accept him, still do not accept him. So that part has not been repaired. The only thing that has happened is he's got new friends here. That's all. The man might as well have told him the truth. He should have said, look, you're not going to change. I don't want you to change. I'm not advising you to change. Go and make new friends. That would have been at least been an honest approach. But this one is not. This one involves deception. So I am saying that when people find solutions here, these solutions quite often are deceptions. They give the impression that they are solutions, but they are not. We have major problems that are unresolved. I mentioned toxic waste. What are you going to do with toxic waste? That's not the only thing. Social issues are not solved today. For example, in the United States, people make laws and they say it is wrong to discriminate by color. You cannot discriminate, you cannot be a racist. All right? So if somebody walks into a restaurant, as it happened recently, and we had this news on the air regarding this one restaurant, I better not name it, which did not serve some black people, and now they have to pay so much, forget how many millions of dollars, in order to to pay back for the damage. Well, you can make a law. The law says if you discriminate against somebody's color, you will pay so many millions of dollars. But that doesn't stop you from discriminating your mind. So in your mind, you still discriminate, but you don't voice it. So what happens? In real life, if you discriminate in your mind, if you are against a particular nation, yourself, and you voice it, you can go to jail. But if you are clever and deceitful and dishonest enough to hide it, then you don't go to jail. So the honest people who express themselves end up in jail, and the deceivers who are manipulating and so on, they are outside the jail, which is the reverse of what we want. So society, by making a law against racism, is just hitting the bottom line. He says, that's the bottom line. The true answer to that is education. But who's going to educate people in that direction? It's very hard to offer an educational program in that area. Same thing with abortion. The same thing with sexual conduct of children. So I am saying these social issues are often presented as solvable or soluble, but they are not. They are not, because the premises with which we are working are garbled, and they are in darkness, and it's all mixed up, and the solutions that are offered are not very good. Because quite often we need to go back to the roots and get our bearing right. And man is disorientated. And if he's disorientated, he hasn't got much chance of straightening out any of his problems. I talked to that man with, a similar man with a similar problem. And he had seen a psychiatrist. And I told him, it's not exactly the same thing here. But I told him, I said, look, you are deceived by the man's advice. You know what the member said? He said, you are confusing me. I was confusing him. In fact, he was so taken by this that he could not see the truth. So what happens is this. With this kind of mentality here, when we look at the light, we see, we cannot see. That's what Plato brought out in the analogy of the cave. Where he said all these people are inside the cave. And they got used to looking at these shadows that they see projected on the wall. When they come out of the cave and to the bright light of the sun, the light is so bright, they cannot see anything. So they want to go back inside the cave where they can see things. That's what happens here. This man comes out of his cave, looks at the light, he doesn't like it, and says, no, thank you. You are confusing me. I better go back in here. There is comfort inside there. Something that I understand. And we find a semblance of that in these conferences too, because quite often we say, oh, this must be the truth. This must be the truth. And then somebody says, well, you're using logic. I don't like logic. Now, I want to know why he doesn't like logic. If he doesn't like logic, then why did God put intellect inside? Why did he say you're supposed to have intellect? You're supposed to have to make decisions. You're supposed to decide between right and wrong. You're supposed to make choices. But what do you mean you don't like logic? What kind of... Where did that come from? That is not... The answer that you expect from somebody who believes that man was created by God. So this is a perversion. But somehow it gains ground. Why? Because of the social pressure that I mentioned in the first part. I said, here is this man who was preaching on the radio, expecting people to jump on the bandwagon against educated people, and he found an easy target. Similarly, in the church, people say, I dislike logic, because for them, that seems to be saying that if you follow the reasoning, if you reason, you might end up outside the church. Well, that's not very intelligent, because Christ reasoned, and he was not outside the church. The Apostle Paul reasoned, and he was not outside the church. Nobody has left the church because he reasoned. Adam and Eve sinned because they did not reason. And I read that passage the other day. Because in that passage of Genesis, Satan said something to Eve, and then the next verse says, and when Eve saw that the fruit was good to eat, she took and ate it and gave it to the husband. There is no dialogue. There is no thinking going on inside her head. So I said also that when this thing here started, sin, man pulled the plug off the wall and he's been going his own way ever since then. Right? There's a separation from God. And man sees darkly. Yeah, we see that in 1 Corinthians 13:12. Now, he says, we don't see clearly. We see darkly, as through a glass. We don't see the things as they are. And but that you can see, here is the theology of seeing. You may want to conduct some study, personal Bible study on that, beginning with Genesis 3:5, where it says, your eyes will be opened, and you will know. So, to see and to know, you will know good and evil. And in Genesis 3, verse 6, the woman saw that the tree was good, pleasant to the eyes, making one wise. Notice, here is the knowing and the wisdom and the seeing, all tied together. And verse 7, the eyes of both were opened, and they knew. Right. So, man's separation from God then is followed by a blurring of the truth. And the blurring has been increasing. Because man distances himself more from God as time goes on. And knowledge of spiritual things is hard to obtain. And if logic is hard to understand, then spiritual principles also are hard to accept. You have a hard time convincing people that smoking is wrong, that selfishness is wrong. You have a hard time convincing people that it does not pay for them to steal somebody else's property. It's going to be very difficult for you to convince somebody against his plan to break into the bank and get $5 million. So if you say, look, you don't need $5 million, he'll say, yes, I do. Okay? I do. That's what I want. I need the money right now. So, if there had been no sin then, no wall would have existed, and this curved line would have continued. And all this would have been unnecessary. Now, what we need to go into next is to show how conversion, what happens at conversion. But before I go into that, I would like to summarize, to ask the, if we turn to handout number 15, we have four questions regarding the argument, and we need to go through those. So this is handout number 15. Steps in the argument, part 5. God and the world. And I put the explicit statement now on in there. God formed the man, and we are trying to find out the nature of creation. Did God form things from a pre-existing substance? The answer, no, he did not. Because all substances were created by God, there cannot be a pre-existing substance. What is the difference between man and animals? The difference is that man was made to be in the image of God by the will of God. When God made man, he willed that man would be a different kind of being. What is the fundamental error in sin? The fundamental error in sin there is that we do not need God's will. We can do without it. Did man's sin affect the created order? The answer is, yes, it did, but I haven't discussed it yet. I will have to, I just mentioned it. I will have to discuss it in detail when we come to it. So now we can move on to part 6. In which we shall discuss conversion, what really takes place when a man is converted. So when a man is converted, he must first of all, to convert means to return to God. That's what to convert means. So you've got to find, you've got to make this road go backwards somehow. You've got to find a way to go through that wall. See, there's a wall. So we've got to go and make that, and break that wall down. So a man then must create a new atmosphere. This kind of world here, we find here, is the wrong type of world for a man to live in accordance with God's will. So, in other words, we knew a sort of a new environment. This is the wrong place. We have to... You've got to put a line sort of through that. And put it in a box. And say, sorry, we don't want that. Now we want to be somewhere else. But we are human beings, so we've got to be inside it. So what is going to happen? You need to create the right environment in which you can obey God. You want to return to the Garden of Eden somehow. You want to go back to where Adam was before he sinned. And that's the ideal thing. So you need to create the appropriate conditions for spiritual life. For when I say spiritual life here, I mean for a life that is guided by the will of God. Otherwise you cannot survive. And for instance, supposing you were to go to Mars, you need to create the appropriate conditions for the lungs. You cannot breathe air on Mars. And here, given a distorted mind, you cannot expect to use that mind in order to approach God. To give another example, supposing that you wash your face and you want to wipe it on a towel. If the towel is dirty, then there's no point in wiping your face with it because you may end up blackening it more. So what are you going to do? Now those conditions have to be generated somehow. Who is going to generate them? Either man is going to generate them himself, or God is going to do that. There is nobody else around. And man cannot generate those conditions because he has a distorted mind. So it has to be God. God has to come inside this square that I put on the board, invade it, and do something. But why would he do it? Would he do it because he has to do it? No, because God... He created the world out of his goodwill. He wants his expression of his will. So he has to invade this world again by his will. That is God's will. He has to go inside this square. But that is sort of it's a free gift. a free choice. Let's put the Latin name for it. Grace. It's gratis. Those two words are the same. So this is where grace begins. Grace then begins. So let's define grace. It's the bringing about of the conditions which restore man's orientation to God. That is what grace is. Now, people have studied the matter of grace, and they looked up all these concordances and all these reference works, and it's a waste of time unless you understand this plan. It doesn't matter what words you use. This is the truth. Grace is God's decision to invade the world, which he doesn't have to do. That's how it begins. Now you may say, why does God invade our little square? Because he has to bring about certain changes. Which conditions precisely does he have to change? He has to change man's will, man's intellect, man's spirit. Which spirit? This spirit here. This is the spirit of God. So let me remove these words here, because I don't want to say God's spirit is worse. I don't mean that at all. I mean the conditions were getting worse. So I could put a line down there to say that to show that the descent into the worsening conditions. Here is the worsening. But this is the spirit. This is God's. This is the life principle. Life source. Life principle. Both public and private, as I wrote up on top. That means man is alive and he has his intellect. But what he does not have is this curve, this constant influence, the flowing of God's Spirit in his life, because he pulled the plug out. Because that is by his will. When man decides to shorten his life, he can commit suicide, then he stops that line as well.